Ah, good evening, everyone, and welcome to a rare Tuesday stream.
Yes.
It's Tuesday, and we're
Which
streaming.
means it's no one's show, which means it's our show.
It's neutral show. It's neutral
Yes.
show time. Yeah, we were going to stream yesterday, but our guest, who is yet to be revealed later,
Yes.
he was ill, and I think he's still a bit under the weather today. So we just a stream, since we have a lot of stream ideas kind of in the.
And an unbelievable amount floating around in our head sometimes.
Yeah, well, I got a list actually. I put a list together. So we pulled one of our stream ideas out of the stream hat.
This is as close as we might ever get to winging it.
Not really, no. This is something I've been putting a document together
Well, that's what I
on.
mean by that. This is as close as we get.
It is. Generally, we know about a week, and we generally know on our previous stream what our next stream will be.
Yeah.
So we generally have kind of at least a good idea of what our next week's. We don't tend to do these on the fly. We also, because of certain things, don't do timely news because it's terrible.
At least not too much.
No. We link in timely news to wider topics, but generally we won't do like hot button, off the press kind of stuff.
Timely
Yeah.
news done for
For free.
free.
Because every time we've tried to do that, it's gone sideways. So
Yeah.
we try and be ahead of the curve. If we try and be on the curve, we actually fail really badly, I think.
No.
We're either behind it or ahead of it, or we're talking about evergreen topics, I think. Normal YouTube-y stuff though.
Yes, thank you to all the people who turn up to the streams regularly to watch them live.
Yes.
We also know there's a big contingent of people who cannot catch them live and normally watch them through in the VODs, and it's always quite entertaining to find out that a lot of people will watch the VODs sometimes in even only one or two stints, which
Yes.
means they're actually really focusing on them, which is a good sign for us because it allows us to know we're making content that is actually engaging in the right
Yes.
sort of ratios.
Aurelian Nautilus Caesar there, demonstrating quite neatly the fact that we have memberships turned on. We
Yes.
are fully monetized. The best way to support us, though, is through Streamlabs. They take the least cut. I will pin that message there. We try to read the chat as much as possible.
Yeah.
We don't just do the paid messages, but the best way to get your thing read out and addressed properly is to do a paid post.
But
It's the way
yes,
the game's
thank
played.
you to the members and
Yes.
people who support us and where we do stuff, whether it's on here or Telegram or Nomos stuff, which hopefully at some point in the coming months we'll have more news about. And yeah, we'll just keep plugging along as we have done for the last while.
Yeah, I will extend a special thanks to people that I see coming back. There's people who lurk the Telegram. I know we're a bit iron-fisted sometimes with stopping people from arguing in the Telegram. If you do join our Telegram, it is not
It's
like
not
we.
a free speech zone. We do
No,
not
no.
believe in
We do. It is
it.
not a debate me club. I
No.
try and keep that on my Discord as well. I have a channel on there, and I just remind people in general every so often that the Cringe Debate channel exists, and to
Yeah.
be otherwise they'll be banished into the Shadow Realm. But that's kind of neither here nor
And I
there.
suppose as well, it's a nice segue to get into the topic we have this evening, which is maybe the inverse sort of side as to why, because I suppose we've kind of some of the streams we've done have been a little bit meta in the past, some of the ones about gatekeeping or knowing who your friends are, and there was a discussion we have in there about conduct and about how you should purport yourself both as a representative of your ideas and also possibly as a representative of your ideas in the online space, as people might want to call it. And that we don't just necessarily look at that through a pure optics lens. There is
No.
also solid strategical reasons as to why you shouldn't spend all day arguing on Twitter or Telegram or Facebook or whatever it is really. And it's not just because it's a bit of a time waste or it's a bit of a LARP. It's because there has been millions of pounds spent across a number of different political campaigns from a whole host of institutions, which we'll show you now, that have actually created a whole industry to make sure that you are on the internet arguing with people day in, day out
Yes.
for whatever psychological sort of effects that may brew within yourself as an individual and as part of a group.
I would say that there's a very good discussion to be had about people's mental default, let's say, to put it in nudge unit terms.
Yes.
That people assume that who they are talking to is genuine unless proved otherwise. But yes. Really, in most topics, in hot-button topics on Twitter, on Facebook, in a lot of different places, you can really assume that who you're talking to probably either isn't real or is in some way incentivized to say what they're saying financially.
Yes, as Dinosaur Hunter in the chat has pointed out, 100% of GM posts are, however, real.
Yes.
If people are posting Apu's, GM,
yeah.
or English you can't understand with lots of M's in it, or yeah. N's in it, then you might be all right.
But I'm going to say,
otherwise,
yeah.
no friend,
good,
no go.
Good morning posts with an Apu are never a PSYOP. They are incapable of being
PSYOP. Or the rare scooter post.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good morning!
Good morning! You are being PSYOP'd into having a good morning. That's the only PSYOP we'll have here. But there's been a bit of news this week that we'll be getting to relatively near the end of the stream.
Which is because it's a nice wrap-up of all of the elements that we're working towards.
We'll still be some jumping-off points that will be in future streams at some point. I've been threatening to do it for a while, but we're going to have to do a stream about Prism and just the shit we already know.
So before we get started, one last point is that the internet is so gay that even the gay isn't real.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
gay is fake.
Even
gay.
The gay, yeah, it's so fake and gay. Even the gay is fake.
It's fake gay.
Fake gay. Oh, there's on so many layers of fake and gay right now.
Speaking of simulants,
yeah. Speaking of simulants or possibly reptoids, Hillary Clinton. We start our story in the forgotten land of.
The before time.
Yeah, the before time. The forgotten land of 2017.
2016, actually, when it was originally published.
Ah, right, okay. Yeah, it's been updated. This is peak 2016 election brain. It's something that a lot of people seem to have forgotten about, though, because it was everywhere for a while. It was kind of a meme, and then it was nowhere, which is Correct the Record.
Yeah.
Correct the Record is one of, if you remember, is one of the most famous front and center, unashamed online astroturfing campaigns in its own terms. It's unique, really, in political campaign terms because of how brazen it was, front and center it was.
We can maybe think on, you know, the amount of, you know, YouGov stuff, YouGov polling, reports, surveys that we saw.
Yes.
During lockdown, how many of those were treated seriously? You know, that was serious social science.
Yeah.
This internet sort of phenomena that everyone was investigating. Yet only a few years prior, as we'll go through with this article a little bit, it becomes shocking how much they've admitted to the fact that it's actually all manipulated.
Well, this is the work of a super PAC. It's the work of a political PAC, as we'll get into later, which is using a workaround. Where I think it may have been sealed up now, but at the time, online posts were not categorized as, you know, direct messaging, really. Yeah. So it allowed the Hillary campaign to coordinate directly with their PAC, which they're supposed to be this fake separation, again, fake and gay separation.
It's what was the GPS one, the Russiagate scandal? Yes.
It's also like a political, I'm not touching you game with the super PACs. But I don't want to get too much into the weeds of US politics. Yeah, this is a 2016 article from the Daily Beast entitled Hillary PAC spends $1 million to correct comments on Reddit and Facebook. Actually, I know there was the jokes before that about the 50 yuan army and, you know, your social credit score is that stuff I think is so famous we don't really need to comment on it. But people assume that this is something that happens in foreign countries.
Yeah.
All that happens.
I mean, we looked at it before, the case from CA Bond's nemesis, where the FBI and the CIA and Clinton, who was Secretary of State at the time, worked directly on projects to use Facebook in Tunisia to make the color revolution happen. Well, same in Egypt.
We'll see some of that, because I've not brought the Arab Spring into this, but it's something we can discuss when we get there, because it's kind of implied. I don't there's actually quite a bit to get through for a slightly impromptu stream. But I'm going to scroll down here and have a look at
turn your phone off vibrate before everyone complains.
Some of the stuff here, sorry. Because it's
Citing lessons learned from online engagement with Bernie Bros, a pro Hillary Clinton super PAC is pledging to spend $1 million to push back against users on Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, and Instagram. Correct the Record's Barrier Breakers project boasts in a press release that has already addressed more than 5,000 people that personally attacked Hillary Clinton on Twitter. It's the Krasensteins.
It really is, yeah. The PAC was created in May of last year, where it was spun off from the American Bridge Super PAC, which is run by a longtime Hillary and Bill Clinton supporter, David Brock. Brock also founded a left-wing media watchdog website, Media Matters for America.
Yeah.
Which runs a lot of the Midas Touch kind of Democrat reply. It still does this kind of work, the correcting of the Record.
Some Bernie Sanders supporting users on Reddit already started to notice the changes on Thursday afternoon. This explains why my inbox turned to cancer on Tuesday, wrote user Okarizi. Been a member of Reddit for almost 4 years and never experienced anything like it. In fact, in all my years on the internet, I never experienced anything like it. Correct the Record, which has received £5 million this campaign season and has spent almost £4.5 million of it, according to opensecrets.org, outlined its strategy against swarms of anonymous attackers in a press release. This is them getting into their barrier breaking works, which is another term essentially for consensus cracking.
Yeah, here's the actual statement itself. Politico uploaded it. Here's the Barrier Breakers 2016 press release directly from the Hillary campaign.
Yeah, we'll go through this.
The first three paragraphs of this are actually amazing because they start with the whole like disinformation framing.
Mm.
As we'll see, all of these are framed as counterintelligence.
Yes.
They're all framed as defensive and not aggressive. As we'll learn, it turns out their opponents actually weren't real and it's fake. They're making up fake people to counter genuine distaste at Hillary Clinton, the co-drone striker in chief. Anonymous online attacks from both sides of the political spectrum have sought to spread lies and misleading narratives about Secretary Hillary Clinton. Hillary supporters are more enthusiastic than Senator Bernie Sanders supporters, and yet oftentimes are discouraged from engaging online and are often afraid to voice their thoughts because of fear of online harassment.
No, my candidate's so evil.
Even
in positively lit media, that I would be publicly harassed for engaging in support with her. Someone help me!
Among the Hillary Clinton supporters attacked online, superdelegates have been subject to vicious attacks for supporting her. Even the director of Move On, which has endorsed Senator Sanders, denounced this harassment. In response to these attacks on supporters and superdelegates, Correct the Record is launching the Barrier Breakers 2016 Digital Task Force. While Hillary Clinton fights to break down barriers and bring America together, the Barrier Breakers 2016 Digital Task Force will serve as a resource for supporters looking for positive content to push back to share with their online progressive communities, as well as thanking prominent supporters and committed superdelegates on social media. So what we're seeing here is very nakedly than thing. Yeah, we're paying people to shill. We're paying people to manufacture positive comments that other people will then share. And we're shilling Hillary Clinton and her superdelegates and basically giving them a pat on the butt and telling them they're doing a good job and pretending it's all genuine.
Okay, to add to that, just to further get at the notion as well, because I think if we just look at this as just a pro-Dem.
Yeah.
Tactic, we sort of almost engage in a little bit of a limited hangout as well.
No.
There's a little thing on consensus cracking that I read before. Under the guise of a fake account, a posting is made which looks legitimate and is towards the truth. But the critical point.
We'll get into that later. I've got that whole post.
I thought if we maybe want to explain the two at the same time,
because
go sort of hand in hand. The critical point is it has a very weak premise without substantive proof to back the posting. Once this is done, then under alternatively fake accounts, a very strong position in favour is slowly introduced over the life of the post itself. It is imperative that both sides are initially presented so that uninformed reader cannot determine which side is the truth. As postings and replies are made, the stronger evidence or disinformation in your favour is slowly seeded in. So you know, exactly as it's saying here. We can continue on with that one there if you want.
It's very typical. There's a great post here. This is slightly old, and we'll be using it throughout because it has some good PDF links, which I'll use.
I think that's the exact same one I was looking at earlier. That's
Cryptome.
It's
an older one. It's been updated a little bit throughout the years, but it's the Gentleman's Guide to Forum Spies. It's a bit old internet, a bit Web 1.0 in some places. But there's some great stuff here about topic dilution, basically how shilling works and how the shills work. And you're right, it is a bit more than just pro-Democrat political messaging.
Yeah.
It's these people being paid as a comment army. And it was, if anyone was around at the time, it was like an overwhelming volume. If anything, they overdid it.
Yeah.
They made it too obvious. They did it out in the open. It really was kind of a slight display of force.
I mean, this is something I saw, you know, firsthand. I remember when those who have been around for a while will know the little incident that happened on a stream with Rose of Dawn a while ago, where we got a visit from a certain constabulary.
We did.
And during that, I made a tweet about it, about how, you know, I just had the police at my door for a tweet.
Yeah.
And that tweet got an unbelievable amount of traction.
It did, yes.
And after maybe about an hour and a half, all of a sudden there was a very specific, you know, the responses were varied. There were people saying, wow, I can't believe this. This is shocking. The state of Britain, blah, blah, blah. But then it seemed to hit like some block of US time zone, US accounts.
Yes.
That all responded in one big wave, being like, the First Amendment doesn't allow this.
Yeah.
You know, the police won't do this. You're lying, as if I had made some form of tweet in the defund the police discourse.
Yes.
And I got loads of blue line Punisher accounts, hundreds of them, commenting, you know, well, you're lying about the police.
Yeah.
Even though that was really nothing to do with it, nor was I American either.
Some of them also made like weird unrelated posts that sounded like they were looking for, they latched onto certain keywords.
Hmm.
And you're right, a lot of them are these weird Punisher t-shirt, thin blue line bot types who were, a lot of them presenting incoherent responses that were non sequiturs to what you would say.
Yeah.
And were also putting it in US terms and US time zones.
Anyone that's spent any good bit of time on Telegram will notice that big Telegram groups, the comments are inundated with that.
Yeah.
Aside from your crypto spams and frauds and stuff. There is all these accounts that are meant to look like American boomer women in their 40s. You know, you describe them as weird, like Q shaman, skin green people. And none of them are real. And all the responses are like emoji laden, as you said, non sequiturs written in broken English that don't make any sense.
A lot of them don't make any sense. A lot of them are there to just shit up the comments, as it were. And we can see that the stated purpose of Correct the Record, as we'll get into here, it talks about FEC loopholes, you know, the Sunlight Foundation, something Watson found out this year. Correct the Record can openly coordinate with the Clinton campaign, so it's open message making like we talked about.
You've got the next paragraph towards the bottom here.
Yeah.
Watson previously worked at Brox Media Matters from America, where their whole mission is to debunk conservative misinformation, and a lot of that ends up being defending Hillary Clinton, which he's never seen anything like this initiative. Usually places like MMFA and CTR are defending her against the media and established figures. This seems to be going after essentially random individuals online, she said. I don't know what they've done. I don't know that they've done anything like this before.
Well, what it is, and as we'll get into later, is a domestic political version of tactics used in the war on terror in the Middle East.
Yeah.
This was 2016, but I'm skipping a little bit ahead here. Back in 2011, there was a US spy operation called Operation Earnest Voice that we'll get to later. That was this.
Mm.
It was this. It was fake accounts that look real. And by the way, this whole super PAC activity, all of this, necessitates the creation of fake accounts.
Yeah.
Like, that's the subtext here. That's the thing that's not talked about, is this necessitates the production of massive amounts of AstroTurf.
Chinese click farms.
Yeah. And it also implies, to be successful, that the platforms in question have collaborated.
They are complicit in not shadow banning the accounts or the networks that are involved in involved in this sort of activity in the first place.
Yeah, and this I think is one of the most, why I want to start with Correct the Record, is one of the most famous and brazen examples of a consensus farm, of a politician going, yes, I'm paying $1 million. I previously paid $4.5 million, you know, to have people talk about me positively online in a fake way.
Deliberately in spaces where otherwise real people are engaging in criticism.
Yes. And not engaging with specific targets, but with any target.
And also quite possibly making posts that instigate that criticism. Because of course, like the whole Gamergate thing.
Yeah.
If you learn the lesson from that, these people always have to put out the bait.
Yeah.
To get the whole thing started.
And once you've got all these people, you can essentially use them for whatever you want.
Yeah.
A lot of this is the nice version of what we've done. A lot of it, as we talked about, Media Matters, is anyone who posts something, say, critical of the security state, will find themselves swarmed with hundreds of messages. And as we'll see in some of the other documentation, a lot of these operatives are trained with keywords to know how to report successfully those posts to the platform.
Mm.
Or they have backdoors into the platform to get rid of those posts.
Like admin tools.
Yes. And... so it is more than just the sock puppet, and it is just more than the political angle that you talked about. We're not trying to limit and hang out this. But the big justification for this before the election and after the election was the idea of the Russian bots. The idea that there was this groundswell of fake accounts.
And the Russian hacker called 4chan.
Yeah. These fake accounts, these operations, that this really, what they're doing is they're countering anonymous disinformation. They are simply doing what their enemies
do. They're leveling the playing field.
They're leveling the playing field, yes. But it turned out that, according to the Washington Post at least, Russian trolls on Twitter had little influence on 2016 votes.
I mean, to come from the Washington Post of all people, Democracy Dies in Darkness people, them to say the fact that, this just wasn't real.
Well, it's information is timely. It doesn't matter if 6-7 years later they admit that their entire operation was fake. In fact, it's good, but, you know, this will be written to the history books. Well, of course these places never actually believed this. That'd be silly.
You wouldn't think we'd be stupid enough to let a few thousand Russian Twitter accounts manipulate our elections now, would you?
Well, it's just funny that... It's
such a gaslight.
Study finds minimal impact from Russian influence operators on Twitter in the Trump-Clinton presidential race. This itself is also like a limited hangout. It just assumes that the narrative itself was real. When there isn't evidence that these Russian bot farms ever really existed. There's a lot of evidence that, you know, Correct the Record existed.
Yeah, we just looked at it.
Yeah. They're openly doing what they're accusing others of nefariously doing, which is it's an interesting way around of doing it. It's like, well, these people are doing this and claiming they're not, so we're just going to do it. This might be happening, so we're definitely going to do something worse.
Let's see what's their conclusion of this little study then. My personal sense coming out of this is that this got way overhyped. Josh Tucker, one of the report's authors, who is also the co-director of the New York University Center, told me about the meaningfulness of the Russian tweets. Now we're looking back at data and we can see how concentrated this was in one small portion of the population. Now the fact that people who were being exposed to these were really, really likely to vote for Trump. Tucker said, and then we have this data to show we can't find any relationship between being exposed to these tweets and people's change in attitudes.
So it's very limited, it doesn't have an effect, and we can't really say whether it's going on or not.
But the study doesn't go so far as to say that Russia had no influence on people who voted for President Trump.
That's a very different statement.
Yes, it doesn't examine other social media like the much larger Facebook. That's actually a worthy point, to be honest. It's because when you get into the whole Facebook, Twitter thing and you realise that it has 10 times the user base of Twitter.
Yes, Twitter is a tenth the size of Facebook.
Nor does it address Russian hack and leak operations. Lastly, it doesn't suggest foreign influence operations aren't a threat at all.
They have to just qualify this. It's funny because they... editorial boards...
What have they got the numbers at the bottom there? Just to... Key findings of the report: only 1% of Twitter users accounted for 70% of the exposure to accounts that Twitter identified as Russian troll accounts.
I remember it was like a dozen that they accused of it. It was a hilariously low number.
Highly partisan Republicans were exposed to 9 times more posts than non-Republicans. Content from the news media and US politicians dwarfed the amount of Russian influence content the electorate was exposed to during the 2016 regime. Say that again. There was no measurable impact on political attitudes, polarization, vote preferences, and behavior from the Russian accounts and posts. So even if it was real, it was a statistical anomaly at best.
Yes. It was far, far smaller than the actual just normal election noise. Which again is funny because the staff of the Washington Post and the New York Times won the Pulitzer Prize for the Trump-Russia connection.
See, I was going to say the dirty bastards, they won $15,000, but they probably live in places where $15,000 isn't even worth wiping your arse with.
So. Yeah, that probably gets you a fancy burger where they live. For deeply sourced, relentlessly reported coverage in the public interest that dramatically furthered the nation's understanding of Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election and its connection to the Trump campaign. But the Washington Post is saying the Washington Post doesn't deserve a Pulitzer Prize.
Come on, have they got any more to this, sir?
There's just basically a list of winning work.
Trump's... Oh my god, you know, officials see Flynn discuss sanctions, White House received warning about Flynn, FBI was to pay author of Trump dossier, Sessions spoke twice to Russian envoy, Trump reveals secret intelligence to Russia. Is there anything in there that's actually even worthwhile or true? It's just all nonsense.
Well, there's a whole Mueller inquiry which went nowhere, but the reason we're bringing this up is, one, because they just basically admitted it was all horse shit, finally. This was from yesterday, timely news, but mostly just because all of this was the justification for the counter-operation, the correcting of the record from the Russian trolls. So if there was no informational campaign to counter, then this is just aggressive propaganda making and aggressive crafting of online consensus to an extreme, to such an extreme degree that I would argue that the Correct the Record campaign itself was counterproductive because it was so overblown. Mm. But I think it was also partially a power demonstration. But we'll get into more stuff here. The next big part of this really is extrapolating outwards. Because another piece of relatively timely news here, this is from last year, actually it's in 2021, but this is a Newsweek report talking about exclusive inside the military's secret undercover army. Let me quickly, nothing we've missed under the document here. It's 60,000 operatives, both online and in the real world. And this is not CIA. This is just like, this is how the US military resources are. The largest undercover force in the world has ever known is the one created by the Pentagon over the past decade. Some 60,000 people now belong to this secret army. Many working under masked identities and in low profile, all part of a broad program called Signature Reduction. Force more than 10 times the size of the clandestine elements of the CIA carries out domestic and foreign assignments, both in military uniforms and under civilian cover, in real life online, sometimes hiding in private businesses and consultancies, some of them household name companies. So this is basically just the military admitting that they operate like the CIA on American soil, like openly.
Yeah, like the online... Oh, sorry. Clear my throat there. From what they're saying here, I don't think it would be hard to argue that, like, online shitlib redtube space isn't just entirely a facet of the American military-industrial complex.
It's 60,000 people. I mean, the Correct the Record boasted about 5,000 interactions and $1 million, and people noticed that. People notice the effect on the internet.
It is, like, the entire...
Yeah,
leftist Twitter economy is reliant on these people and the money that flows through them from the security state.
Well, we'll get to that when we talk about the Grey Zone one, which we covered previously. That there's a good link there. Mm. But yeah, the unprecedented shift has placed even greater number of soldiers, civilians, and contractors working under false identities, partly as a natural result of the growth of the secret special natural growth.
And to think as well that, you know, being how independent America and the United Kingdom are as states, that why would we need the covert human intelligence sources act that basically allows members of the military and the police force in the UK to act like the way they are acting here under the employ of the American government?
Well, they're talking about, you know, it's the very carry out their day-to-day work in various made-up personas, the very type of nefarious operations the United States decries when Russian and Chinese spies do the same.
Mm.
It seems to be orders of magnitude greater coming from the US, though. And it's an amazing admission that there are domestic assignments here.
Mm.
That there is a huge amount of embedded people. A lot of these will probably be online. Newsweek exclusive report on the secret world is a result of 2-year investigation involving the examination of 600 resumes and 1,000 job postings, dozens of Freedom of Information Act requests, scores of interviews with participants and defense decision makers. What emerges is a window into not just a little-known sector of the American military, but also a completely unregulated practice. No one knows the program's total size, and the explosion of signature reduction has never been examined for its impact on military policies and culture. Congress has never held a hearing on the subject, and yet the military developing this gigantic clandestine force challenges U.S. laws, the Geneva Conventions, and the Code of Military Conduct and Basic Accountability. Good Lord. Signature reduction effort engages 130 private companies. But the big one, really, is the fact that this is the newest and fastest growing group in the clandestine army that never leaves... is the army that never leaves their keyboards. These are the cutting-edge cyber fighters and intelligence collectors who assume false personas online, employing non-attribution and misattribution techniques to hide who and where... who and the where of their online presence, got it badly worded, while they search for high-value targets and collect what is called publicly accessible information, or even engage in campaigns to influence and manipulate social media.
See, if you were to do this from the other end and were to engage an anti-leftist organization online to do these things, you know, obscure who you are, obscure where you're working from, collect data on people, you would be done under terrorism acts, the misinformation acts, miscommunication acts. There is an unbelievable amount of laws in the UK that you would be charged under if you even attempted to do anything that they're talking about here.
Yeah, this is illegal for normal private, even though they're talking about it being public information and, you know, they're trying to make it sound as normal as possible. But this is highly illegal. Cutting edge cyber fighters sounds like a Saturday morning cartoon.
Tip of the keyboard.
But we've done the correct the record stuff. We've talked about the fact that that had an impact to the point that it was noticeable in the online environment.
Scroll down further here.
Yes.
In the electronic era, a major task of signature reduction is keeping all of the organizations and people, even the automobiles and aircraft involved in the clandestine operations, masked. This protective effort entails everything from scrubbing the internet of telltale signs of true identity to planting false information to protect missions and people, as standard unforgettable identification and biometrics have become worldwide norms. The signature reduction industry also works to figure out ways of spoofing and defeating everything from fingerprinting and facial recognition at border crossings to ensuring that undercover operatives can enter and operate in the United States, manipulating official records to ensure that false identities match up. Just as biometrics and real ID are the enemies of clandestine work, so too is the digital exhaust of online life. One major concern of counter-terrorism work in the ISIS age is that military families are also vulnerable, another reason participants say to operate under false identities. The abundance of online information about individuals, together with some spectacular foreign hacks, has enabled foreign intelligence services to better unmask fake identities of American spies. Signature reduction is thus at the center not only of counter-terrorism, but part of the Pentagon's shift towards great power competition with Russia and China. Competition, influence, and disruption below the level of armed conflict, or what the military calls warfare in the gray zone.
Yeah.
A space in the peace conflict continuum.
Jesus. But this is all being funneled domestically. What they're doing is they're claiming that Russia and China has this capacity to justify the fact that they have this capacity.
Yeah.
It's very much kind of the symmetricalization of the warfare. And it's all predicated on the fact that we need to do terrible things to our population because Russia or because China. When really, there's a lot of evidence that China and Russia are lagging behind in this area massively, especially Russia.
Yeah.
If you look at the online propaganda competition with the Ukraine conflict, it's very obvious that in the information space, Russia is massively outclassed by the American propaganda machine to an extreme degree.
And as we also know about how techniques that were originally pioneered to combat, say, Islamic or communist terrorism in the UK was then used against right-wing clandestine groups, we can be almost 100% sure that these same techniques, you know, what are they saying? They're getting rid of their online trails, their real-world trails, putting out fake information, using online operations to diffuse consensus here and there. This will be used against us basically at all times, quite possibly.
Yes, it will be. There's dumb things in here about, you know,
they've got like the Mission Impossible
masks. Yeah, but the main bulk of these people really will be like the 50 Yuan army. They will be the permanent...
We're still in the infancy of our transparent world, said the retired senior officer, cautioning against imagining that there is some identity gap similar to the bomber gap of the Cold War. We're running this war, including on the cyber side, even if secrecy about what we are doing makes the media portrayal of the Russians look they are 10 feet tall. So his worry is that there isn't enough positive PR about how intrusive the US military's space on online actually is.
Yeah. He's worrying about the PSYOP being too successful in the right direction. It's amazing that this can be admitted to, but there are 60,000 US military personnel outside the CIA, outside the NSA, who are employed to be fake people, do fake things, and do so on American soil. So you've got super PACs who are able to do it. And now you have, you know, essentially the Pentagon and the American military who are able to do it. And the kind of the grab here really is that there is a, there's a lot of information that this is still ongoing. One of the only decent pieces from the Twitter files from all of these leaks, you know, apart from like the 10,000 pictures of Hunter Biden's penis that they're going to release every day on the hour, every hour.
Woo!
Woo! More penis. but one of the only, I think, useful pieces of information out of the Twitter files was the fact that, that we have direct evidence that very recently CENTCOM or Central Command was aided by Twitter in its covert online propaganda campaign. They're only really talking about the Middle East here because I imagine the domestic stuff, there's like that they would actually get sued. This is what they can say.
That's the thing, though. That we were thinking about this earlier on. You have the Twitter files stuff.
Yeah.
And like no one anywhere else, as far as we can tell, is taking correct the record and connecting it to these Twitter files.
Yeah.
Like people are looking at these as if they are disconnected events.
Well, they're looking at it in isolation.
Ah.
The big thing that annoys me about this Intercept article is that it doesn't mention a lot of the Intercept's own leaks from Snowden, but it doesn't mention this Operation Earnest Voice, which really this is part of.
Yeah.
This is an extension of Operation Earnest Voice, as we'll get to. But the Twitter files show, internal documents show Twitter whitelisted CENTCOM accounts that were then used to run its online influence campaign abroad. So what we're seeing here is the other part of the equation we're talking about.
I don't know, guys. Would people really do this? Just go on the internet and lie?
Yeah. We're seeing the other part of this in that you have US Central Command, who we're talking about there, amazing information warriors. What they're really doing is they're going to all these social media companies and going, you know these are fake.
Mm.
A lot of other people know these are fake. Just pretend they're not fake.
Yeah.
Just whitelist
them. Well, then let's get down to the third paragraph here.
Yeah.
The, you know, Pentagon is use this network, which includes US government generated news portals and memes. I'd love to see them.
Yeah.
Remember Vault 7 and all that stuff in 2014? We'll forget about that.
Yeah. No, we'll actually see some of their memes.
Yeah. Effort to shape opinion in Yemen, Syria, Iraq, Kuwait, and beyond. The accounts in question started openly affiliated with the US government, but then the Pentagon appeared to shift tactics and began concealing its affiliation with some of these accounts, a move towards a type of intentional platform manipulation Twitter has publicly opposed. Though Twitter's executives maintained awareness of the accounts, they did not shut them down but let them remain active for years. Some remain active. So this whole, oh, the 2020 election, oh, Twitter get rid of some of the information about some of the ballots is a nothing burger. Because what you have there is an admittance that Twitter works hand in hand with the security state.
Yes, it is. It's direct evidence that Twitter, which is one of the smaller social media networks, works hand in glove. That's why we did the thumbnail as we did, that Twitter really is an arm of the security state. And all of these campaigns are not particularly sophisticated.
No.
But the US is able to do this because they have a structural advantage of power.
On July 26, 2017, Nathaniel Kaler, at the time an official working with the US Central Command, also known as CENTCOM, a division of the Defense Department, emailed a Twitter representative with the company's public policy team with a request to approve the verification of one account and whitelist a list of Arab language accounts used to amplify certain messages. We've got some accounts that are not indexing on hashtags. Perhaps they were flagged as bots, wrote Kaler. A few of these had built a real following and we hope to salvage. Kaler added that he was happy to provide more paperwork from his office or SOCOM, the acronym for the US Special Operations Command.
So they're actually useless at this. They get flagged rightly as bots and the US CENTCOM, Central Command, the information heroes have to go to Twitter and go, please whitelist us, please.
Can we see his email here further down? Thanks. Sure is tough to do web ops when you can't tweet.
It's just, like I said, it's so hand in glove and it's so obvious. And the fact that people didn't think this was happening is embarrassing. Mm. Because there's all, like I said, we have Correct the Record. We have the 60,000 army. We have the leaks of Twitter working hand in glove to assist in this. You have the two sides of the equation, the creation of fake accounts. They're obvious, really, with data analysis. And then social media being leaned on by the American government to not remove these accounts.
Because as well, like, it looks further down here. Twitter at the time had built in an expanded abuse detection system aimed in part toward flagging malicious activity related to the Islamic State and other terrorist organizations. As an indirect consequence of these efforts, one former Twitter employee explained to The Intercept accounts controlled by the military that were frequently engaging with extremist groups were being automatically flagged as spam. They're almost reporting on that there as if that's an error on Twitter's behalf.
Yeah.
Yeah, as an indirect consequence.
Yeah. It's kind of funny that this is also just admission that a lot of the propaganda noise and even like it's another hat tip to the hand that the US military and US intelligence organization had in creating and maintaining, you know, Islamic State and ISIS and all of this. And the good rebels and the bad rebels and arming the good rebel stuff.
Yeah, in his email, Kaler sent a spreadsheet with 52 accounts. He asked for priority service for 6 of the accounts. I wonder what priority service on Twitter looks like, eh?
It basically means being verified but not verified. You get all the perks of verification, but not necessarily a check mark.
Including at Yemen Current, an account used to broadcast announcements about US drone strikes in Yemen. Around the same time at Yemen Current, which has been since been deleted, had emphasised that US drone strikes were accurate and killed terrorists, not civilians, unless, of course, they are at weddings, and promoted the US and Saudi-backed assault on the Houthi rebels in that country.
So it's basically, they're framing drone strikes to Yemenis like they framed the vaccine to us.
Yeah.
Safe,
and
accurate.
Effective.
Yeah, safe and effective. Safe and effective drone strikes. But nowhere in this document do they mention the fact that we've known about this since 2011. Nowhere on The Intercept does The Intercept reference itself.
Mm.
I find the lack of joining up here embarrassing, honestly. I think whoever wrote this is either incompetent or they are deliberately giving people a limited hangout.
Again, someone in the chat's making a good point there. It's illustrative how comfortable government agents are in revealing sensitive information to tech managers. Well, I think that's part of the thing, is when you think of these people first and foremost as tech managers, it puts the illusion in your head that they are cooperating.
Yes.
I think, given how much we see here and how much we will go on in future when we look at Prism as a whole,
yeah,
these people are subservient. They are not cooperative.
No.
Their position at somewhere like Twitter is contingent on being involved in some kind of operation like this.
Yes. In fact, Twitter and the other social media organizations were given priority place in the market by selling information to the US government through proxies and by cooperating in initiatives like Prism. We know this. This is a matter of public record that all social media really is an extension of the security state. But through all these, I hope to just conclusively prove to people that you should assume most of what you see on hot button topics online, on social media especially, is fake.
Yeah, it's like Elon Musk's going to have his position on Twitter. He's going to burn Fauci. He's going to reveal the truth on the 2020 elections. But is he going to go into this stuff? I doubt it. Well, is he going to discuss his position as the executive on Twitter and what that means for security requirements placed against him?
Well, really what we're seeing here being framed as a revelation is the necessary and logical consequence of policy that has existed for more than a decade. But we'll get into that policy in a sec. I've talked about it before. That is Operation Earnest Voice, which most people have never heard of, but is the codifying of SOC public accounts. The big one here as well is that... let me get it here. One of the revelations here is that the... here we go. This appears to align with a major report published in August by online security researchers affiliated with the Stanford Internet Observatory, which reported on thousands of accounts that they suspected to be part of a state-backed information operation, many of which use photorealistic human faces generated by artificial intelligence, a practice known as deepfakes.
Yeah, the researchers connected these accounts with a vast online ecosystem that included fake news websites, meme accounts on Telegram and Facebook, and online personalities that echoed Pentagon messages, often without disclosure of affiliation with the US military. Boom. Well, it's all there.
Here's the report itself. The report itself is fascinating. And it talks about a lot of metadata, a lot of stuff.
This is called Unheard Voice, I believe. Is this from Stanford?
This is from Stanford Internet Observatory. It's from Stanford University. But when it gets into some of the AI-generated stuff, it's amazing. At the same time, Twitter and Meta's data reveals the limited range of tactics IO actors employ. The covert campaigns detailed in this report are notable for how similar they are to previous operations we have studied. The assets identified by Twitter and Meta created fake personas with GAN is just the form of AI generation it is. GAN generated faces posed as independent media outlets, leveraged memes and short form videos, attempted to start hashtag campaigns and launch online petitions, all tactics observed in past operations by other actors. Coordinated authentic behavior. Importantly, the data shows the limitations of using inauthentic tactics to generate engagement and build their influence. The vast majority of posts and tweets reviewed received no more than a handful of likes or retweets, and only 90% of the covert assets identified had more than 1,000 followers. The average tweet received 0.49 likes and 0.02 retweets. But the issue is volume, and this will get to some even more incompetent campaigns than this had massive amounts of engagement.
Well, is there a nice conclusion on this PDF that we can go to just for the sort of summation of the results?
Let me quickly get it over here because it talks about Central Asia, Iran, Afghanistan, the Middle East. It doesn't
if
really...
If we just go to scroll up for a second.
Yeah. It doesn't really have a conclusion section, unfortunately.
We'll just look at the methodology section.
Executive summary,
further
yeah.
down. I was if you go further down to where they've got their methodology and overview section, at least for the general.
Yeah.
And the decision to focus on exclusively covert activity represented in two data sets drawn from separate takedowns by Twitter and Meta posed certain methodological challenges. We conducted a qualitative review of content samples, metadata, and the profile information associated with each account to determine if an asset should be classified as overt or covert. Conducted additional open source investigation to determine asset classifications when required. We then built a social media network map of the covert Twitter account's followers. Yeah, so they're basically trying to map this stuff out. I'd imagine they got to a point whereby they mapped so much of it out that it became very hard to discern what was noise and what wasn't.
Yeah, there's the point here that they talk about the fact that Twitter and Meta removed two overlapping sets of accounts while violating their platform's service. This means, though, that these were accounts they were given the okay to remove.
Yeah.
These might be low engagement accounts that were being retired, because as we learned with Twitter's hand in glove cooperation, the more impactful accounts are manually whitelisted by cooperative tech executives who have one foot in the intelligence world.
Well, they also seem to be run directly by people at the Pentagon.
Yes, they are.
The platform's datasets appear to cover a series of covert campaigns over a period of almost 5 years rather than one homogenous operation, which means it's not just the CIA or just the Secretary of, or just the Department of Defense or just CENTCOM. You know, all of these different groups all have their own attaches as social media organizations for their own operations.
Well, the problem is that this is not a revelation. This has been standard American operating procedure on a proper procedural level, like a codified procedural level, since 2011, since really kind of the dog days of the war on terror, moving into the kind of Arab Spring era. This is an initiative from, once again, the Obama administration. This is an article. I love the little warning. This article is more than 11 years old. Like that.
It's old, it must be fake.
Yeah, it must be fake. But here's an article...
Oh God, General David Petraeus.
Yes, that's Petraeus there. But here's an article from The Guardian from 2011.
Oh God, they literally used the US online PSYOP. Yeah. Great.
yeah, they actually talk about it. This is back when you could say that.
Psychological operations.
This is back when people, you know, all of this, as we'll get to later, is definitely being used in the COVID stuff.
Yeah.
It's definitely being used against a domestic audience when they said it wouldn't. It's definitely being used in kind of a smudged way to create this consensus and create all this stuff that was specifically put forward as a method of controlling information in the war on terror. This was supposed to be targeted at Afghan and Iraqi goat farmers.
I think this applies to even further than that nowadays, because you have your Tavistock-style HR orgs that are involved in the sort of therapeutic state angle of this as well, which is why you have TikTok, Facebook, Instagram reels are all dominated with, you know, weird things about autism or disabilities or masks or using certain types of hand sanitizer and all these things, when you look at them as singular items, seem like one weird piece on social media, but all together as a collection of posts, you realize that it's a massive sort of therapeutic state operation to make people live and engage with things in such a certain manner.
Oh, we have, they don't talk about AI generation here because that wasn't part of the conversation, but it's very much implied here. Here's the Guardian article revealed: US spy operation that manipulates social media. Military sock puppet software creates fake online identities to spread pro-American propaganda. The U.S. military is developing software that will let it secretly manipulate social media sites by using fake online personas to influence internet conversations and spread pro-American propaganda. Again, a lot of those will be kind of what we call now deep fake faces or just, you know, generated faces and generated accounts with a lot of the background information. And it's a point that I've not got a link for, but it's a point I went to raise that as the US government, the UK government, as online identity verification becomes a government business, it actually becomes easier to make these fake accounts.
Well, yeah, because they're the people that are tasked with minting them in the first place.
Yes. So you're much more able to, as a matter of course, build in trust without having to be in contact directly with the social media manager.
A Californian corporation has been awarded a contract with the United States CENTCOM, which oversees U.S. armed operations in the Middle East and Central Asia, to develop what is described as an online persona management service that will allow one U.S. serviceman or woman to control up to 10 separate identities based all over the world. I wonder which Californian corporation this is.
I wonder which... Well, the whole thing is that this operation was not mentioned in that Twitter files article, which I find amazing, yeah. Because this is the operation. What we saw on Twitter, you know, as late as 2021, is this Operation Earnest Voiced still going on?
Mm.
And we have proof that not only are they creating and operating these accounts, but like I said, the other side of it is they are getting permission to operate these accounts from the social media companies themselves, who are compliant in a war on terror style operation.
Look at the fourth paragraph here.
Yes.
The discovery that the US military is developing false online personalities known to users of social media as sock puppets could also encourage other governments, private companies, and non-government organizations to do the same.
Yeah.
The CENTCOM contract stipulates that each fake online persona must have a convincing background, history, and supporting details, and up to 50 US-based controllers should be able to operate false identities for workstations without fear of being discovered by sophisticated adversaries. CENTCOM spokesman Commander Bill Speaks said, that confused me, the Bill Speaks said, the technology supports classified blogging activities on foreign language websites to enable CENTCOM to counter violent extremists and enemy propaganda outside the United States. So they're also using this on like weird dark websites and stuff like that as well.
It's framed as counter propaganda, but all this stuff is from 2011. It exists pre, you know, the Russian information war narrative. All of this exists outside of the current narrative. So it not being brought in feels like a deliberate attempt not to allow.
Oh no, it's all right though, because Bill Speaks said,
none of
the interventions would be in English, as it would be unlawful to address U.S. audiences with such technology, and any English language use of social media by CENTCOM was always clearly attributed. Not so much anymore, is it?
No, there's very clear evidence that that is not the case. The news
it took was 2011 to 2016 for that not to be true.
No, and very openly not to be true as well. In the case of the Newsweek report and the...
CENTCOM said it was not targeting any US-based websites in English or any other language, and specifically said it was not targeting Facebook or Twitter, except from in Tunisia and Egypt and the Middle East. Many other nations
where
it did exactly
that. We now have evidence
that
it was.
Yeah.
We have direct evidence from Twitter that CENTCOM, who this is, who created this software, is in contact with Twitter, engaging them in counter-operational propaganda within this remit.
Mm.
There is clear evidence now that all this remit has been broken. It's in English, it's on US soil, it's been done by non-intelligence operatives, it's been done by normal military personnel, and it's being done on major social media sites in a way that you have to expose normal users to it. There's a Washington Post article here as well, which is hilarious because it's almost like simping towards it. New and old information operations in Afghanistan. What works?
Oh, let's see the correction here first.
Yeah.
This column incorrectly attributes a quotation to Mattis, commander of the U.S. Central Command. It was a statement by his predecessor, Petraeus, and not Mattis. Oh, is that just some weak one?
Yeah, it's a weak one. After years of spending hundreds of millions of dollars trying to get its message out to Afghans, the United States is still experimenting. The State Department, for example, is trying a new communications approach in Kandahar by turning to old media, radio, and television. It's planning to lease blah, 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 broadcasting towers.
Yeah, we are in an information war, said Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton, told a Senate Appropriations Subcommittee recently. The fact is, most people still get their news from TV and radio, so while we're being active in online new media, and we have to be active in the old media as well. So there is a statement from Clinton herself that she was involved in these programs and foreign wars, and this then became the exact same technology and tactics that were then used in Correct the Record.
Yeah, it is. It's General Mathis, the Central Commander, recently told Congress that CENTCOM's communication program, Operation Earnest Voice, will reach regional audiences through traditional media as well as via websites and regional public affairs blogging. And all of this was being overseen by Hillary Clinton.
Mm.
This is where the Correct the Record campaign comes from. Correct the Record is appropriation of a Pentagon program targeted towards war on terror countries.
Listen to the next paragraph here that Mattis is talking about, and think not about the group he's talking about, but some other groups that they might want to do this with.
Yeah.
We can directly track some of this. In broad terms, we challenge their propaganda, we disrupt the recruiting, we show that it's silly to go down this line, we bring out the moderate voices, we amplify those, and in more detail, we detect and we flag if there is adversary, hostile, corrosive content in some open source web forum, and we engage with the web administrators to show that this violates website provider policies.
Yes.
I mean, there's a further admission there that much of the policies that were put forward on Twitter and Facebook-style platforms in 2011, 2012 were maybe done with the direct input of the US security state.
Yep. It's an amazing admission once you realize that, you know, the Twitter file leaks, the Newsweek report, all of this testifies to the fact that this has gone far beyond the remit they promised it would.
Mm.
That they have broken what are supposed to be like the containment red lines of these programs. And that all of this now, all of these war on terror initiatives that were supposed to be used against Al-Qaeda are now being used directly against the normal populations of other countries and the American public in general. With public criticism of the contract bouncing among bloggers, Mattis told the committee that CENTCOM's lawyers had determined the activities were strictly within the guidelines of the law, and that in today's changing world, there are now traditional military activities that are no longer something that can only be handled by Voice of America or someone like that. Basically, they're just justifying it, and they're coming around to it later. Yeah, it's here's a little kind of military operation wiki thing about Operation Earnest Voice, because I thought this was pretty good. It's a great little bit here.
Oh, the RAND Corporation.
Yeah, yeah. A research with the RAND Corporation claimed it would not be easy to exclude U.S. audiences when dealing with internet communications.
Admittedly honest admission there from the RAND Corporation,
yes. But this, you can look it up, like I said, 2011, we've known about this. What the Twitter files are revealing in breathy terms is just the continuation of Operation Earnest Voice. And like I said, the revealing of the fact that the other half of this is the cooperation of the social media companies. That was always going to have to be the case. Mm. It also gels quite well with something we talked about from The Intercept, which is the DHS leaks. The fact that, again, I won't cover this in too much detail, but the Department of Homeland Security quietly broadening its efforts to curb speech against it is dangerous. An investigation by The Intercept found years of internal DHS memos, emails, and documents obtained via leaks and ongoing lawsuit, as well as public documents, illustrate an expansive effort by the agencies to influence tech platforms. So there's a whole point here again.
This was the whole
DHS
nonsense about disinformation that they launched, then quietly said they weren't going to do it, and then actually just continued doing it anyway under the guise of a different name. Was that one of their memes if you scroll up there?
Yeah. So this is, again, something we covered before. If you want to research it yourself, just type in The Intercept DHS leaks. It's actually quite a good article. It's quite detailed. But what it showed was that the Department of Homeland Security directly engages. It has a special backdoor portal into Twitter, into Facebook. It has special backdoor portals into basically all of the big social media companies through which they can almost directly moderate content and flag content it regards as disinformation.
Wait, scroll up for a second here. I'm interested in, but further up, their third category of data they have there. Disinformation Government Board, a panel designed to police misinformation, false information spread intentionally. I understand that. Disinformation, false information spread intentionally. I understand that. And malinformation, factual information shared typically out of context with harmful intent.
This is what used to be referred to as hate facts.
Yes.
That allegedly threaten US interests. Whilst the board was widely ridiculed, immediately scaled back and then shut down in a few months. Other initiatives are underway as DHS pivots to monitoring social media Now that its original mandate, the War on Terror, has been wound down.
So you must post true information with the correct intentions.
So what we're seeing is the techniques pioneered during the War on Terror directly coming home, with the DHS, again, provably having back doors into all the social media companies and using them to do operations like Operation Earth on a domestic level, as it was promised to have never been done. This also happens here in the UK. There's a lot of documents here about kind of radicalization, the counter-narrative and identifying the tipping point. Here in the UK, there's a lot of public discussion around, you know, a lot of these prevent programs and things like that. And the fact that you can have, or should have, counter-narratives that are put out there to what is considered radicalization. As we've talked about during our previous streams, War on Terror comes home, and a lot of the other ones we've talked about, kind of the UK informational space and deep state stuff, is that all of this is being turned on what they refer to as civic nationalists, as in people
cultural
who are...
Cultural nationalists.
Yes, people who are skeptical. Sorry, cultural nationalists, yes. People who are skeptical, merely skeptical of not just immigration, integration. They could have a positive view of immigration, have a negative view of the level of integration. These people would still be classed as
extremists.
Terrorists.
Well, that was the extremist is the category they seem to want to go for at the moment.
It then goes on to say that people who are extremists basically should all be assumed to be future terrorists. But this is a document from the UK government response to the 8th report from the Home Affairs Select Committee. Presented to the Secretary of State. Where's the content? Conclusions and recommendations. There's no evidence that shows a single path. This is quite a short one. It doesn't actually have a contents page. Conclusion and recommendations. Social media industry response to online radicalization. They basically just go into the fact that there need to be all of these prevent programs, all of this counterintelligence, all of this counter-narrative stuff, in the same way that the US does. But it's now kind of done in the open, in a policy manner. I don't have any specific bits concerns about. Yeah, here we go.
It's worth saying as well that this is based on the prevent strategy, which,
yes,
if anyone was privy to stuff in the news the other week, it was turned out that money that was funneled into the prevent strategy then was funneled back out into Islamist extremist groups.
Yes.
So we know how effective that was.
It's a whole point about the fact that there needs to be more disinformation. There needs to be more narrative cracking.
Yeah, we have to balance the extremist opinions online with neutral.
Sorry, conclusion recommendation. Developing and communicating alternative messages.
There you go.
The approaches to counterterrorism as successive governments have not so far achieved the success we would all have desired. Instead, in some circumstances, they have created suspicion and alienation among the very people they need to reach. Excuse me. This raises suspicion to the extent at which prevent has reached those it needs who is limited. This is exacerbated for families who identify radicalization may tend to retreat, making them even harder to reach. Failure of so-called community groups.
The success of Abdullah X's YouTube channel on appealing to young people shows how, if done sensitively and in collaboration with community organizations, government involvement can be effective engaging with the target audience.
Yeah.
So much like we saw in the Grey Zone article that talked about COVID.
Yeah.
The government and GCHQ and other bodies are going directly to like influencers.
Here's the bit I was looking for. The UK has the biggest and best talent and creative industries in the world, including in video games.
But they're directly going to like influencers and Zoomers on Instagram and whatnot to get them to produce the propaganda for them.
Yes, they are basically farming this out into the information sphere, so people who are quote-unquote genuine content creators can then be turned into state assets. There's another one here called...
Wait, go back just a second on that one. Just on the bottom paragraph there. Local communities in the UK are ready and willing to enter the fray and defend the British way of life. The government must not squander any opportunity to harness this beneficial force. It must forge and disseminate strong counter-narratives that will address the willful blindness and blame games of vested interests, combat the lies and deceit that the extremists want to feed our young people in order to send them to their deaths.
Again, this is framed, it's all being framed in an anti-Islamic way, still. But all of this stuff, as we've seen with the MI5 priorities, MI5 is now saying that their highest priority is right-wing extremism.
Yep.
So that's where they must be used. It's amazing the switcheroo of terms here, that they are, with one hand, phrasing the most distasteful efforts, like just pure online propaganda based at the, you know, facing the British people. They are couching that in anti-Islamic terms to make it more palatable to the old set of prejudices from the war on terror. Again, they are quite an amazing document. It'll all be in the links for the streams if you guys want to read along. We do post those. There's a government communication service. This is a document called Resist 2, Counter Disinformation Toolkit. And this is something that's basically issued to like local councils, librarians.
Anyone that runs a government-related online social media platform of any manner has probably been workshopped through this stuff. First opening quote by Aldous Huxley.
Yes. An unexciting truth may be eclipsed by a thrilling falsehood. Again, during the COVID pandemic, technology and social media have been used to keep people safe, informed, productive and connected. However, the same technology is also enabling misinformation, disinformation to spread, becoming increasingly sophisticated since the publication of the original Resist Toolkit. The pandemic has brought to bear the terrible impact of misleading information as people look for truth, comfort and guidance for themselves and their loved ones in distressing times. But the pandemic has taught us many lessons, but especially for us communicators, it has shown us that impactful communication can save lives.
The proliferation of false information severely undermines trust in democratic institutions, processes, and cohesive societies. Institutions and processes and cohesive societies. As communicators, we all shoulder the responsibility of delivering truth to our citizens to maintain the fabric of our institutions and uphold our democratic values.
Good Lord, that statement. Basically, you have to keep the show going.
But the best thing, I think, in this is the two graphics that you had picked out and showed me earlier on, which we can basically flip on their head and use as a guide for if you ever see people acting in this manner and not the other, they may as well be...
That's a GCHQ one, sir.
All right, sorry. That's the other security document. On this topic.
What we're seeing is a trickling down of tactics from like direct GCHQ spooks to frontline, low-level council workers.
Yeah.
In that all of these people are being trained that, no, you must... Anyone who has information counter to what the government is saying must be resisted, and you must resist them.
We are the resistance.
Or else people will die and our democracy will end, basically. And the pandemic shows that you have to have information hegemony. And it is the job of every government employee.
Anything good in the contents in this one or the intro section?
I'm trying to have a look. There isn't actually a proper...
You've got to go down further.
Oh, there we go. This is a toolkit. What's new in summary? Why do we need to resist? Why do we need resist? There we go. Recognize, early warning, situational insight, impact analysis, strategic communications, developing and implementing communication strategies. It explains how communicators can make their more engaging and impactful. It's a propaganda toolkit. Why do we need resist? Basically, it goes through the same thing.
Yeah, the misinformation, malinformation, disinformation.
It's exactly the same wording as the DHS.
It's like a code book.
Yeah.
Here's how to, you know, someone makes a post about manipulated false and misleading information can threaten public safety, fracture community cohesion, reduce trust in institutions and the media, and undermine public acceptance of science's role in informing policy development and implementation. And it also does the inverse of this.
Yes.
It creates cohesion in groups where you're not attacking them, where you're bolstering the consensus. It threatens public safety when you do actually mislead people about, I don't know, the effectiveness of vaccines, masks, reduce trust in institutions like, you know, parallel institutions that they don't want you to trust in. So they just create disinformation about those. You know, it's completely the other side of the coin. It's
There's
great.
So much like COVID stuff ladled into this, though. Kind of amazing. It's just like, no, it is your job that people should trust the government, even if the government doesn't deserve trusting. It's a mean unto itself. Malinformation deliberately misleads by twisting the meaning of truthful information. It's the same points over and over again. We see the same toolkit.
Communications must compete in this crowded information space. Your job as a communications specialist is to understand your audiences, to earn their attention and trust, so that you can supply them with important and sometimes vital information. This means developing an understanding of threats to the information environment, particularly those that stand between you and your audiences.
Again, this is a document meant for normal low-level government workers.
The Stasi was never this blazing with their stuff, were they?
Like I said, this really is the codifying of all civil servants of any kind into the intelligence.
Oh, look at that as well. Online harms. Yeah. The UK government's online harms white paper identifies several harms from online activity and false information that most relevant for this toolkit are. Ugh.
Yeah, yeah. Online manipulation, abuse of public figures. So not liking
Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, basically. So they actually completely fold this. God, this has all the links in it together. Yeah. They actually fold this into the online harms. If you want to watch our online safety stream, which is quite comprehensive. Recognizing misinformation, case studies.
We're getting on a bit here.
Yeah, yeah.
So instead of, I don't know, will we get through the last few items we've got in a sort of quick fashion here and we'll...
Yeah, yeah, we're kind of getting towards the end here, honestly, but that's... Oh, God. All this will be linked, but they go into AstraZeneca, they talk about the vaccine information. Mm. It's all the same stuff and it all very much
Which is... I would rather we didn't flood everyone with too much stuff about the context of the examples and more just focus on...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the key element here, which is that in several places across both media outlets, government outlets, and NGO outlets, it is admitted that the security state and Western sort of forces overall are all working together to create fake accounts that promote elements of geopolitical strategy, public health strategy, PR strategy for electoralism, PR strategy for nonsense woke shit that they just want people to talk about constantly.
Yes.
They will even create arguments about it because it allows them to further solidify their consensus. So they will do things like put out, you know, anti-woke takes that are weak so they can have their own woke bots come along and destroy it and crack the consensus. And it never ends.
We'll get into, like I said, we've got a little bit more to cover here. Glow in the Dark's donated $20. Thank you, Glow in the Dark. Saying democratic institutions by this report seem to be the only important part of democracy. Nothing in the report about the people or their desires. Only that the people are NPCs. Need the institutions to control them and their beliefs. Yeah, it's an extremely what could be kindly referred to as paternalistic view of democracy, which is that the people need to be told and. Democracy is when people obey.
Mask-off moment.
Yeah, it's kind of a mask-off. I just want to point out as well that the counteringdisinformation.org, which is a very big organization that's been used by all kinds of international NGOs, is funded by the USAID. It is basically funded by the US military aid budget. It is considered a US aid asset.
Well, it's just, everyone will remember the sentence when we get to the end of it, but just that first paragraph. This resource combines the collective experience of organizations on the front lines of combating disinformation globally. This living project provides an outline for what's being done to address the challenge in key areas and a searchable inventory of the organization around the world engaged in making the digital landscape safe for democracy.
Yeah. Effective democracy is required that citizens have access to accurate and impartial electoral and political information. Like the Pentagon fire hosing fake pro-drone strike propaganda into their eyeballs with the express cooperation of Twitter.
We do not drone strike weddings.
Yeah. We accurately drone strike weddings. Safe, accurate,
and effective.
And effective, yes. But yeah, the Countering Disinfo is run on the US aid budget, which I just thought was funny. It links in very well. We talked about it during our BreadTube security state stream. But there was a leaked report that shows that Syria's PSYOP teams were using astroturfing the BreadTube star philosophy tube.
Again, we'll go watch our, is
Yeah.
it Bread Tube and Imperialism?
It's called the BreadTube security state, I think.
Surveillance state or
Yeah.
security state or whatever. The stream we did on it towards the end of, it'd probably been about this time
Yes, it
last year
was.
nearly now.
It was beginning of 2022, I believe. It basically shows that the fact that a lot of the tools that were invented and funded to essentially do informational psyops in Syria were brought home during the
See,
pandemic.
I shared this to some people back when this first happened, and I remember showing it to Radlib,
Yeah.
and all I got a response message was, in quotes, "The CIA turned me into a woman."
Basically, yeah. There's a whole like the philosophy tube person's a whole rabbit hole in themselves. But basically, they were given direct talking points by the US secu by the UK security state via organizations that they'd
Well,
sh
the Valiant Projects
yeah.
one, which is one we looked at, which was directly running operations in Iraq and Iran since like 2006 or something like
It
that
was
on their
also
state media.
responsible for the astroturfing of the White Helmets, which have
Yes,
since
that too.
been disavowed by basically everyone involved since their US and UK propaganda leader was found as like zipped in a suitcase in a hotel room, basically. It's that whole thing. But no, the Grey Zone report, they're basically they get derided as tankies, but they're outside of the establishment leftists, basically. And they did a very good report on this, and I would recommend you reading it. But we did cover this in our BreadTube kind of security
And
state.
then there was, this is sort of the, I think the last kind of item
Well,
we've got.
the big jumping off point here that people have been noticing is to tie it all up. We've shown these operational, sorry, these information operations going on, and now we've had a San Francisco Standard reporting that there are fake COVID pushing accounts or fake masking pushing accounts
It's, there's a bit more to it than just
that
that,
are
though.
that yeah. It's a lot more to it than that have got thousands, tens of thousands in many cases interactions. Let's just read the San Francisco Standard. These doctors pushed masking, COVID lockdowns on Twitter. Turns out they don't
No,
exist.
there was a paragraph in this I read yesterday, and I don't think I've laughed that strongly in quite a
Where do you want
while.
it?
Let's keep scrolling
Last month, Dr.
down.
Robert Honeyman lost their sister to COVID. They wrote about it on Twitter and received dozens of condolences, over 4,000 retweets and 43,000 likes. Exactly 1 month later, on December 12th, Honeyman wrote that another tragedy befell the family. Sad to announce that my husband had entered a coma after being in hospital with COVID. The doctor is unsure if he'll come out, they tweeted. This year's been the toughest of my life, leads my sister the virus. It's the first time in my life I don't see light at the end of the tunnel.
The two here are
Yeah.
just these together
Yeah.
is one of the best things I've ever read.
Again, the condolences and well wishes rolled in, but there was a problem. Honeyman wasn't real.
The transgender doctor of sociology and feminist studies with a keen interest in poetry who used they/them pronouns was, in fact, a stock photo described on Deposit Photos, a royalty-free image site, as smiling, happy, handsome Latino man outside headshot portrait.
Yeah.
Their supposedly comatose husband, Dr. Patrick C. Honeyman, was also fake. His Twitter photo had been stolen from an insurance professional in Wayne, Indiana. So, you mean to tell me that these accounts running about on Twitter that signal boost every single aspect of the regime aren't real? God forbid. How?
Oh,
Oh
it's also quite likely that these are possibly NGO-backed accounts.
no.
And they are not US military accounts because the US military accounts aren't actually this incompetent. They don't use stock photos, they use AI composite. So the only reason these people were caught, if these people were US military assets, as a lot of these accounts have proven to be in the past, they would not have got caught through this method. They are actually more incompetent than some of the correct the record people, which implies that there are an even greater number of actors out there who are engaging in this.
This
But
is just the sloppy stuff.
yes, this is just the stuff that gets noticed. The two fake doctors whose accounts urged extreme caution about COVID-19 were part of a network of at least four fake accounts that touted their ties to the LGBTQ community, vocally advocated for mask wearing and social distancing, and dished out criticism to those who felt they were not taking the pandemic seriously. The Honeymans could not be reached for comment, as they do not exist. At publication time, Robert Honeyman's account was no longer active. Sorry, the fake doctors were uncovered by Joshua Gutterman Tren, a self-described gay writer pursuing a Master's of Fine Arts at Pennington College. He saw Robert Honeyman's tweets about their husband being in a coma, noticed people he followed also followed them, and thought that they might be part of the LGBT academic community. Excuse me, but after 10 minutes of Googling, Gutterman concluded that Robert's Honeyman's photo was a stock image, and their biography stretched boundaries of believability. And an academic who left no traces on academic websites. So this is basically a bored lib going, oh, who's this person I'm seeing all over my time? Oh, no, they're not real.
This character looked like liberal Mad Libs.
Yeah.
Which is just great.
Yeah.
But this is something that, I mean, we're not going to sit and belabor the point because we're getting close to kind of 90 minutes anyway. We'll finish up soon. But, I mean, how many times have me and yourself, over, say, the last 18 months, 2 years, took people to one side and sort of been like, look, all these accounts you're engaging with online might actually not be real. And that you're not even owning the libs because there's nothing there to own because they don't exist. And time again, we have been told by people that, no, they're 100% real people. Yeah. They really care about this stuff. You know, I'm actually not wasting my time by, you know, engaging with this content. And yet here it is, a complete admittance of the fact that, you know, never mind just on the military stuff we've looked at, but on top of that, there are all these NGOs who are working sort of half and half with the security state to create this consensus around all these positive values, or at least the values they deem as positive. It sort of all becomes laughable. And I'm hoping that as we've sort of done this stream and that more and more people come across this subject, that people will stop interacting with Twitter accounts that are not real.
No, it's the whole point that there was four accounts in this little network that were all trying to corroborate each other. It's kind of amazing that there's, trans Ukrainian flags in the Twitter name, rainbow flag in his bio, suffering an infectious disease caused San Francisco to declare a state of emergency. It's all of that. They.
So wait, does that mean maybe all this monkeypox stuff was all done by accounts that may or may have not been fake too?
Yep.
But it's such great bait.
It is great bait.
Oh, look what's happened to the fags. Ooh, and then everyone gets to jump on them and dogpile them.
These are so obvious. There was four accounts. You know, there was one purporting to exist to his dead sister, one purporting to exist to his husband, one purporting to be his, and another one in kind of in that little cluster that we're getting. Very high interactions to the point that people noticed.
Yeah.
Like, people actually noticed these accounts, and that's really what tripped them up. These were incredibly lazy.
Yeah.
These were lower on the totem pole than you'll see with the kind of professional accounts. Again, there's a document here from Cryptome, which is a great kind of like skit site I've seen for a while, which is, again, the Gentle Person's Guide to Forum Spies. We talked about consensus cracking. But basically, you will notice that people deliberately come into your discussions and do a lot of these tactics. Topic dilution, information collection, anger trolling. And then they were talking about gaining full control, and that a lot of these people will appeal to be moderators of a forum or server and purport.
That's an interesting point. Just that's gaining full control. It's something I've tried to explain to people. They will never digitally genocide us.
No.
They will not get rid of us all. Mm. And right there, someone else has recognized that.
Yeah.
You know, through all these tactics, you can kill a forum. By this method, the forum can be killed quickly. However, it is not always in the interest to kill a forum, as it can be converted into a honeypot, gathering center to collect and misdirect newcomers, and from this point, be completely used for your control and your agenda purposes.
Yes. So it's much more advantageous for them to do capture. So there's a few points I want to go through here, kind of just from the document. I'll tell you what, I'll put the little document up on the screen because it's. But the whole point is, like, what can we extrapolate from this? Because I've got a little bit of an end point. Again, we're going a little bit further than we thought time-wise, but I want to cover this. What is developed for foreign wars always comes home to be used in the population. These operations only gain visibility when they are lazy, clumsy, or leak. We can assume their range and prevalence are larger than we know about. So, you know, very Rumsfeld unknown unknowns. governments are increasingly in charge of tools like attributes, networks, and that verify online identities. Highly active and boosted accounts pushing raging propaganda are likely to be fake or paid. These accounts are there to waste your time and farm responses to prevent harassment. Anyone who's, you mentioned Gamergate, anyone who's around during Gamergate knows about the harassment farming stuff she talks about. It is highly likely most people have interacted with a security state agent online, and even more likely people with distant views have interacted with them. Therefore, you cannot take the online public square and marketplace ideas as genuine in any way. A lot of this has been conspiracy jacketed by things like dead internet theory, anti-internet conspiracy, where the when the evidence really is that there's overwhelming evidence that large amounts of engagement on hot button topics is fake.
Yeah.
Like we know, we've known this really since before the Snowden revelation. This is again another Intercept article by Glenn Greenwald before they have, you know, before the Intercept became even more watered down.
And before Glenn Greenwald just became the scientist sycophant.
Yes, it's. I'm going to use this as a bit of a lead into our eventual kind of Snowden Prism Files stream. But one of the underexplored aspects of the Prism leaks were how Western intelligence agencies are attempting to manipulate and control online discourse with extreme tactics of deception and reputation destruction. This goes beyond just what would be almost considered slightly harmless consensus manufacture. One of the first slides here, it talks about disruption operations, but one of the first slides here is this, which is, like, I thought this was fake when I first saw it, because it is so...
Is that the ISD
yeah.
thing in the top left there as well?
Yes, it is.
It's an interesting group of people for them to be working with.
This is directly from GCHQ.
Well, it's also Five Eyes, if you look at the bottom.
Yes, it's Five Eyes, but it is GCHQ.
Yeah.
How to discredit a target. Set up a honey trap. Change their photos and social networking sites. Write a blog purporting to be one of their victims. Email/text their colleagues, neighbors, friends. It's just like pure, like... It's not saying, oh, we're going to reveal who bad actors are. It's like, no, honey trap them. Put fake images on their social media. Essentially write a blog pretending to be a victim of them.
Defame and slander them.
Yes, it's pure, like, fuck you tactics.
Discredit a company, leak confidential information to companies, the press via blogs, etc., post negative information on appropriate forums, stop deals, ruin business relationships.
There's a lot of it here, but the one I really wanted to point to is this, because I see a lot of this.
Yes.
And this is what is being done directly to groups like us, kind of that we can prove. So there's been another couple of donations here.
Should we leave the... Super chat to get there, because this is kind of last point. Don't worry, we will read
them. I was going to say, we will read them at the end, so don't worry, guys. But this, I think, is...
They set up honey traps, then make fun of us for avoiding girls. It never ends.
Well, it's the whole thing of, you know, old Chan rules. The internet is a place where, you know, men are men, women are men, and children are FBI agents. it's the old law. People don't remember the old law. I'm from that background. Identifying exploiting fracture points. So they know what brings groups together. Shared opposition, shared ideology, common beliefs. They know what pulls groups apart. Personal power, pre-existing cleavages or pre-existing splits, competition and ideological differences. So what you will see is, especially in right-wing online groups, you will see the injection of...
Say, for example, there is a discussion on, you know, effectively trying to change something about your local school board.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, people are, oh, well, we would have to get in, we would have to get in, fund it, we would have to do this, we would have to do that. And all of a sudden comes in and says, you're all Christ cucks.
Yeah.
You should become pagan chads. You're all faggots, you know, and they will come in and just spout nonsense.
Yes.
I mean, someone saying the paganism debate. It's not the only one, but it's one of the first
paganism debate.
Yeah.
Gay LGBT debate. A lot of the trans story time stuff, I would argue, is an attempt
sidetracking to the question about Jews. Oh, you don't name them. You're a gatekeeper.
Yeah. Anyone who's coming in and being disruptive and focusing on fracture points is potentially one of these.
Because I don't want to sit there and be like, woe is us, we're the people who are targeted. But
everyone is.
No, I know. That's the point. But I mean, because it's maybe a more obvious example, is think of the number of times, and I'm sure people have seen it, whereby people have engaged in us in a non sequitur manner about issues that we have cleared up with most people and they are well aware about, you know, our living situation or a number of other things. And yet, it will then become a hot button issue for debate again, because it's easier to disrupt via that than it is to actually disrupt via some sort of proper engagement.
You will find that there are a huge amount of people who purport to be in the quote-unquote online right, who engage in the tactics on the right constantly.
Yeah.
And they are either actors who are so disruptive naturally that they might as well be enemy agents,
or they will attempt to, and the inverse, countenance anyone who's trying to do the things on the left.
Yes,
which is, I think, something we have done a lot of points, which is trying to find common ground amongst the people in the distant right who, say, for example, come to Nomos events,
yes,
or are interested in specific elements of political theory, be it stuff to do with managerialism, Austrian economics, questioning democracy. And when you gauge in these things, you end up having a small number of people in a space on Twitter being like, oh well, yeah, you know, you're right, actually being against democracy is one of the best things we can do. And then someone will come along and be like, well, how do you know, again, how do we do this without voting, how do we do this, that, and the next thing without funding, without appealing to the normies?
Yeah.
And you've got to remember that these people have no ideological alignments.
No.
So it's not always one way or the other. They may be framing themselves as more based or less based, but the whole premise of the thing is that they are framing themselves as different to us in an effort to disrupt what we're doing.
What I would like to, the practical advice I would have for people is, unless you have someone who is engaging with you in a constructive way, do not engage. Mm. It is very likely that you are being disrupted. Yeah. There is a literal army of people out there. And something to factor in as well is, we know for a fact that these intelligence agencies use AI-generated images for people.
Mm.
So why wouldn't they use AI-generated responses to automate these and use keyword searches and the advancements in kind of the GP4, whatever it's called, GP3, chatbot interfaces to essentially automate this process? Because we see a lot of it, like you talk about, with the non sequiturs and the nonsensical responses that do not feel human. The state actors and the large NGOs, the people who have the resources to do this, the means to do this, and we prove that they've done all of these steps in the past. We don't have direct proof yet that they're using this AI generation of text, but it's the next logical step from using AI generated people run by human sock puppets is completely automated online consensus cracking, in that if you make a comment with certain keywords in it, you will be inundated with responses from the security state trying to make you feel small, wrong, and isolated. We see the effect of that constantly. Yeah. I've started asking people, I'm like, look, I've not used any hashtags, I've not even used any, you know, very hot button combination of keywords, we don't share any connection. How did you get here? Like, how are you viewing this post? Where have you come from? And I've never had anyone answer that.
No.
It's quite funny, really. Like, seriously, if you get someone who starts picking your stuff apart, but okay, who are you? What is your, you know, where are you from? What is your angle here? And if someone is actually wanting to have a discussion with you, they will describe who they are, describe how they got to your content, and describe what they're trying to achieve by engaging with you. Mm. If someone can't do that, they are not worth engaging with, whether they are a genuine actor or not. And I think that's the best takeaway you can have from all of this, is do not waste your time, because so much online discourse, especially around like the Kanye stuff, the LGBTQ plus division stuff, the pagan Christian stuff, all of that stuff, all of the division points and pre-existing cracks, you will find massive amounts of these non-genuine actors involved. And we, like, there is, nobody can say there isn't, because we've just presented to you overwhelming proof that all of this is happening, happening at scale and happening with the cooperation of all the social media sites. It is not being paranoid to think this is happening.
No, I think you'll find we're just schizos.
That's really what I wanted to put forward, is that we've known this, like you said, since 2011. We've known about Operation Earnest Voice. We've known about the fact that this all has been brought home to a domestic audience. We know about all of this stuff. We know about the consensus cracking. We know that GCHQ uses much harder tactics than the one that we've covered, with, you know, without flinching. So it is extremely reasonable to assume that all of this is going on at a much larger scale than has been revealed to us.
Yep.
Because this is just the stuff that we know about.
Oh, right. Shall we get to the Super Chats quickly before we head out?
Well, we're going to quickly do the Super Chats. Thank you to everyone who's donated. It's always nice when we have so many donations that we can't cover them.
Yes.
Another $5 from Glow in the Dark. Thank you, Glow in the Dark. Truth be damned, only stuff that helps institutions grow their powers or increases their prestige should be allowed. Manufacture consent, the report. That pretty much sums up what we read there from the UK government. Mm. Paul Moosefoot.
Lex Friedman is no actor. He got to where he was by being an exciting, captivating speaker in Oz.
I don't know it. I think that's sarcasm.
Yes, we too are Lex Friedman appreciators, Paul.
I don't even know who he is.
Yes, we do.
Glow in the Dark, another $2 says BS, 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 and therefore we rule. That's what a lot of this is. Mm. A lot of it is power projection. A lot of it really is not something, even on the face of it, that's worth engaging with. So I would encourage people to limit their online energies into something more productive.
Mm.
Because the time wasting is part of the point.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if they are effectively communicating or not. They are wasting your time.
Mm.
And in an asymmetrical situation where a group, let's say a government, definitely has more resources than you do.
Mm.
So they can effectively waste your time.
And we've got another one from Kate as well. Great content, guys. Do you have any thoughts on the propaganda coming out of Ukraine? I heard it's been run through the US, but it's felt pretty clumsy up till now. Well, it is clumsy, because I think a large part of that propaganda is playing directly into this in front of us here.
Yes, it is.
Oh, you're a Russophile. Oh, you're a Ukro-Azog. You know, you're supporting Zionism by being in support of Russia. You're killing the white race. You're a race traitor because you don't support Ukrainian self-determinism.
Yeah.
And it's all a waste of time.
It's all,
for the most part.
It is, in my experience, deliberately cartoonish.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, engaging with...
The best one for me, and I've said it on our streams before, and I think it's maybe the thing we can leave on, is who in the hell and the Pentagon was knocking up all those fash wave montages for Ukrainian forces just weeks before, or in the weeks sort of after all this conflict kicked off? Was that just people who had time on their hands knocking those together?
I think that there definitely is an angle, like with the Ukraine stuff, of it being deliberately just like sledgehammer rather than scalpel.
Mm.
I think that the war has been turned into such a, like, the COVID stuff was like that too. If you look at some of the COVID posters, they are deliberately cartoonish. They are overtly dystopian in a demoralizing sense. And that is, I think, a lot of what's being done with the Ukraine stuff. It's meant to take people who are already inculcated further and agitate a lot of people who are not inculcated, and then use that churn as a method to leverage the propaganda about foreign war towards a domestic audience.
Mm.
I think a lot of the propaganda about Ukraine isn't about Ukraine.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the propaganda in Ukraine is about doing this, like you said. It's about creating a tension point, or, you know, even just a fake tension point where you'll get massive amounts of people on Telegram going, no, Azov is based. They are our white brothers.
Mm.
And you'll get an opposite contingent going, no, Russia is based. They're our Orthodox brothers. And you will engage in the dialectic of a distant foreign war rather than building your own community. I think that Ukraine, with the reason we don't talk about it, is because it's a giant distraction. Like, even talking about the propaganda, it is falling into the propaganda because you're talking about it. You're expending energy towards it. So that's, we prefer not to do that.
Anyway. You know,
curious game. The only winning move is not to play.
Yes, I think that is us for this evening, though. We'll have to finish quick before Jess scratches the couch to bits.
Yes. we need to go feed her, Jess. I think she's pretty funny. But thank you guys for coming. Thank you for all the donations. It's very, very, very heartening to see people engaging in productive discussion. I do enjoy our chat. Our chat's usually pretty good. We've not had the porn bots yet, so we're going to actually leave before they appear.
And I think maybe one last point would be, if anyone ever tells you you're a schizo because you have the ability to intuitively realize that accounts on Twitter that you're engaging with aren't real, send them this.
Yeah.
Or send them wherever we put the notes, which will probably be...
The notes will be in a community post on the community tab. They will also be in the pinned comment on this video.
I'll probably also put them on Telegram as
well. Yes, they will be everywhere. So anywhere you will find us, you will find our notes. But they, like I said, there is so much evidence. You're not a schizo. Good night.